Our scripture lesson today comes from Exodus chapter 3. We'll be reading verses 1 through 15. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that the bush was on fire. It did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I'm concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be a sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, What is his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, Say to the Israelites, The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. May God bless the reading and the hearing of the word today. Well, of all the stories we could read, that one is probably one of the more familiar to just about everyone who's logged in today. I'm so glad to see so many of you are here. It's a story that in many ways has been inscribed into our imaginations by media. For some of us, it may be the Cecil B. DeMille picture that was painted Charlton Heston in a dignified way, bowing and genuflecting before the burning bush. Maybe you can remember and recall that scene. You know, for others of a different generation, it may be the DreamWorks really powerful rendition of it in their great animated classic, Prince of Egypt. But in one way or another, the story has a certain kind of form and frame that we already seem to understand it. But I want us to remember the frame in which it's placed here. Let's listen at least to the brackets around which this experience of Moses in the wilderness takes place. He's just escaped the fury of the Egyptian Pharaoh. That Pharaoh was his adoptive grandfather, after Moses murdered the Egyptian overseer who was abusing an Israelite. Moses has run for his life to Midian, just a tiny tribal community in the southern desert region on the east side of the Dead Sea. He's met a woman who would become his wife, Zipporah. That name means little bird in Hebrew. And they very quickly have a son that Moses names Gershom. That name means stranger or sojourner. Probably in naming his son that, it's an indication of how he understood his own existence and maybe even the destiny of his own family life. Maybe he's found a place to live the remainder of his life, but he's always going to be a stranger in this strange land. He finds work shepherding for his father-in-law, Jethro. And he's taken that flock of sheep now to the far side of the wilderness, the scriptures tell us, far and out of the way, a distant place, far from anything he knows or anyone might be around to see. And there at Horeb, in other traditions, also known as Sinai, the mountain of God, he pastures those sheep. And it's there that he spies this burning bush, a bush that's on fire, that doesn't burn up. And Moses does something that we might understand, but also might not understand is a little odd. He stops and ponders that bush. And after observing it for a long enough time, decides maybe he should go over and take a closer look. When rabbis read this story, very often they like to point out that God doesn't speak until Moses pauses to observe what's going on around him. When Moses takes the effort to take a closer look. You know, it was a couple of years ago now that I took the youth group of my church in Raleigh to the western part of the United States. And there on a Navajo reservation, we spent a week supporting a church, a Navajo church, that was doing lots of ministry and evangelism there in their community. And we helped do some of the ministries and help fix up the church and do some painting and things. But one of the real treats in that cross-cultural experience was to experience the home cooking of the Navajo grandmothers. They were in charge of our food every single day, and it was delicious, and it was unique and different. And one day, some of the girls decided they wanted to learn how to bake Navajo bread, the flatbread that was so common at all our meals. And so one of the distinguished grandmothers invited them in to learn how to bake this bread. But the kids were really chatty. And they kept on sort of talking and snickering with each other and all those things. And then finally, the grandmother just stopped. And she was silent. She didn't say a word for the longest time. And the kids finally got quiet, expecting her to keep talking. And she said, "When you are ready to listen, I will continue talking." And I'll never forget the way that called them to a different sort of attention. Imagine this story going a different way. Imagine Moses feeling the pressure of his time as a working parent. Just get the sheep fed and watered and get them home. He's got to get to the gym before it closes tonight. He's got an appointment that he's got to keep a little later. He's got a backlog of messages that are waiting to be responded. And here he is out in the wilderness. There are so many things, so to speak, that could have distracted him, that could have pulled or compelled him away from this encounter. But this story turns in first part on Moses' attentiveness to the world around him, bringing a sort of curiosity and observation to his environment, where he is, God declares, is holy ground. And intending to that unique moment, that place, and that time, with an expectancy to hear God, God speaks. Think about the times that we're in. I mean, we literally have fires burning in our nation. We have protests and outcry in the streets. We have smoke rising from muzzles of those who are out in the streets. Another person shot last night in Portland. Our schools are not as we want them to be. Our daily living is not as we'd want it to be. And yet, are we listening to the events in our day, in our time, with a sort of expectancy to say God might speak through these? Or even more boldly, God is speaking through these. And what might we hear if we pause and turn our attention more intentionally to the events of our day, to the needs of our day, to the outcry of our day, to the concerns of our day, instead of simply trying to make it through on our own? When Moses turns to tend to that burning bush, God begins to speak. Moses, Moses, he calls out. And Moses responds, "Here I am. Take off your shoes. You are on holy ground." And God introduces God's self in a traditional formula. "I'm the same God that was with your father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." And Moses hides his face. This has become a true theophany. It's become a true vision of God. And he is afraid at this point to see God face to face. We know that the friendship God kindles in this place grows into one that is celebrated as one where Moses could speak to God like a friend face to face. And then God begins to declare why God is speaking now. "I have observed the misery of my people. I know their sufferings. I have come down to deliver them, and I will bring them out of that land into a good and broad land flowing with milk and honey." And I often think about Moses at this point, head bowed, hearing God's soliloquy, using all of these first-person pronouns, God declaring all the things God will do, and Moses saying, "Right on! I'm right behind you, God. I'm there all the way with you." One of my former youth is now a missionary in Japan, and when she and her husband first began that journey, they had to engage in a great deal of fundraising. And she sent me a beautiful, eloquent fundraising letter. And at that time, I didn't have certainty that I would have a lot to be able to spend on her mission. And so I said, "You know, I'm very supportive of this, and I'm behind you 100%. Know that you have my unqualified support." And she responded to me, "I'm glad, and I know I have your support. I need your money." And it was a wonderful way to break the ice. God does the same thing. "I'm behind you," Moses surely is thinking. "I'm with that mission, God. You are the God who saves, who emancipates, who frees." But then for Moses, all of a sudden, the focus turns not on God's self-disclosure, but now God's commission. Verse 10, "So go. I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." That's a very different thing entirely, isn't it? All of a sudden, Moses realizes that the burden of understanding and hearing the voice of God clearly in his life has implications for his life. And he begins to produce questions that, in one way or another, try and set this command aside. First, he asks, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" God responds with a powerful assurance, "I will go with you. My presence will go with you. And I will give you a sign on the other side of things. You will bring them here and worship on this holy mountain." But that does not convince Moses. He asks another question. "Well, then who are you?" "Well, I am who I am." The deep personal disclosure of God. A name unlike any other name. A name that traditionally was viewed as so powerful it wasn't even uttered aloud, but instead simply substituted by the word Lord, Adonai. But this is the God who goes with Moses. This is the God who has called Moses to attend to the needs of the day, to carry God's concern for justice, as many prophets will after him. Tell them, I am, has sent me. Well, that will convince him, surely. If you read on in Exodus, you realize Moses has not finished or exhausted all of his excuses. I'm not a good speaker. And so his brother Aaron becomes a speaker, so on and so forth. But we know that for every one of our disqualifications, God's call is what ultimately will qualify Moses. And this is the pattern that's set for God's people for many, many years to come, even to our present day. Whether it's Gideon or Isaiah or Jeremiah or Ezekiel or Mary, the mother of Jesus, when God calls them to service, it's often met with reluctance or resistance or a lack of energy or enthusiasm or confidence. God is forever calling persons to speak to the powers of our day. God is often calling God's people to say things no one wants to hear. And the prophets had a way of dying at the hands of those they were called to speak to. Moses is no Charlton Heston in this story. Moses is you. Moses is me. He's less eager to speak truthfully, and he's more eager to leave the tasks to somebody else. But sometimes the task is ours. Sometimes the task is only ours. And it is we who must be the agents of God, who will respond when God calls, "Here am I." Amen.